Hey there, this is Kyle Hebert, the voice of Ryu from Street Fighter V. Rise up. The answer lies in the heart of battle. You're listening to ACMG Presents Talk Time Live. Hadouken!
Here comes a new challenger. Time for your Talk Time Live exclusive.
Ladies and gentlemen, on with the show right now, I have none other than Ruben Langdon, the voice of Ken Masters from the Street Fighter series, and Dante from Devil May Cry, to talk about a lot of things that's going on in his world. Dante, for that matter, Ruben, how's it going?
It's okay. Some people call me Dante. That works, too.
It just rolls off so well.
Yeah. I've been doing this role for so long, and it's just been... it's just part of the territory, I guess. I've kind of gotten used to it.
Well, you're like the what is it? The Kevin Conroy to Dante in this case. Like you're the voice of him, so it's like he's so synonymous with him.
Well, I'm glad that the fans can take notice and sort of can, you know, keep me employed in that sense because.
Indeed.
Because without their appreciation, it wouldn't be happening. And I love the character. It's so much fun.
And
so
we
much.
Definitely appreciate your acting abilities towards it, too. It really brings a kick. Almost like an 80s kick, too. I liked it.
Yeah. He's kind of got, you know, that 80s nerd goofiness going.
Right. Over the top type deal.
Yeah.
So I got to ask. You're in Big Bear right now. What's the weather like right now?
Oh, it's beautiful, clear. We do still have some of the fires going up here. It started a few days ago, but they're winding down. The firemen up here, just they're incredible. Every year we get fires, and they get worse and worse every year, obviously, from our ever-changing weather and so-called climate change. But they're kicking butt and really doing an amazing job, and it's cool to see the town supporting them too, because you can go down the street. I was riding my bike yesterday, and just down the street later in the evening, kids come out and they have signs, and families go out in the front yard and hold big signs thanking the firemen for their courageousness and their bravery and what they're doing, because without them, Big Bear as the city probably would be all burnt up and crispy. By
I bet. One of my co-hosts, actually Terrence, he's a firefighter too. And whenever he goes out, it literally scares the hell out of me. Because you never know.
I tell you that that is an intense job. And especially here in the mountains, and you know, it's so dry, and we're still, you know, even though California did get a lot of rain this past winter, it's still Big Bear's still way below the normal rates. When I first started coming up here about 5 years ago, the lake was full. It was beautiful. Our lake is like there's two lakes, actually, Baldwin Lake and Big Bear Lake. Baldwin Lake is just a big dried up hole.
Wow.
And Big Bear Lake is way below, like 10 feet below the normal level. So it's sad to see everything just dried up and
it's the equivalent of a neighborhood going, like, you know, a really good neighborhood going downward, sort of speaking.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, in essence, weather-wise, I mean, people-wise, it's actually Big Bear's been growing, and it's really, they've been putting a lot of money in the infrastructure and making the town and the city nice.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, nature-wise, it is hard to see. It's to see the nature sort of drying up, and especially the fires. It's so heartbreaking to see some of my favorite hiking trails and stuff. I haven't gone close to them yet, but I can, from a distance, I'm just seeing the smoke and the black charredness.
It's heartbreaking.
It's heartbreaking.
And I can imagine, because like we talked before the show, I mean, Big Bear is like one of those spots that, you know, martial artists and people who just want to train in general with the climates and everything and the peaceful and tranquility just want to go up there to be. And it's
absolutely.
I can only imagine.
Absolutely. That's one of the reasons I love it up here, is I get such good training in. I can be in nature and hikes and running and mountain biking, and it's just there's a lot of good good challenges for your cardiovascular system. Gets a little more of a workout up here in the higher elevation. We're at 7,000 feet, so
yeah,
it's but yeah, it'll come back. It always does. You know, nature always comes back.
Hey, good people make good things happen. What can you say?
Exactly.
Now, I do want to definitely talk about, because as you know, E3 was just recently around, and mm-hmm. Capcom, you know, gave us a nice little gift of the story demo trailer to the much anticipated Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite game that just came out, which I discovered you were in there. And, you know, I know
it
you can't.
It sounds like me. It sounds like me.
Your evil doppelganger, I guess.
Yeah.
with the mustache and beard. You don't have a mustache and beard right now, do you?
No.
Okay, no. You're evil doppelganger, definitely. But I know you can't talk insanely too much about it, but what I would like to know is that, you know, upon discovering this game actually wasn't in the planning about a year ago since last. This just popped up out of nowhere. Can you at least talk about how this came about, and, you know, how did you get connected with it, and they contacted you again? You know, how long ago was this in the making?
Actually, I hate to do this to you, but I can't say anything about that.
You can't say anything about
no.
the game?
No. No, I mean, it sounds like me. I can't even say if it's me or not. Sounds like me. Sounds like me, but I cannot confirm or deny if it's me or not.
Sounds like a plan. Now, with that said, let's talk about Dante real quick. I mean, we spoke about this, but, like, how does it feel to still be relevant as the character Dante? And, you know, despite the fact that we haven't seen a game in quite some time, he still lives as an iconic figure in a video game history and universe right now. And you know, just the industry in general.
Yeah, well, like I was just saying, it's every day I get comments, and you know, I just got a letter, and I go to convention appearances, and somebody just sent me a letter telling me how Devil May Cry influenced their life. You know, 10 years ago, over 10 years ago for Devil May Cry 3, mm-hmm. for Devil May Cry 4, it's been 10 years, I think, since it came out, or around there. And to have people come up to me and just say how the game influenced, you know, got them through some hard places, you know, just being able to connect with the character and play, and just, you know, it blows my mind. You know, For me, I had an amazing time making, you know, and I was co-producer for the cinematics, working on both 3 and 4. Right. And, you know, and over the years, the character's definitely grown on me. And, you know, and the last rendition of Marvel vs. Capcom, not Infinite, but that other one that I definitely can say I was a part of. And,
mm-hmm.
Just having that character keep showing up, you know, and then having the reboot came out and fans were sort of poo-pooing it and wanting the original Dante, or I should say, I'm not even the original Dante. I'm the original Dante was, I think it was his name, Drew Combs.
Right.
For 1 and 2, the motion capture was performed by a Japanese actor. I forgot his name.
Right.
But, for 3 and 4, I did both the motion capture and the voice, and for people to still, you know, recognize that and sort of call him the original Dante.
Well,
you know?
Plus also you did the anime, correct?
Yeah, did the anime as well. So right. having I guess people associate me with that character is even though it's been that character's, there's been different renditions and different mm-hmm. People have but they still having, I guess, the original Drew Combs version. Then you had the offshoot, the DMC reboot, which I'm not even sure who the actor was in there, but but a lot of people still sort of come back to the version that I sort of took part in and give him a lot of praise, give me a lot of praise for performing the role. And you know, and I appreciate it. I appreciate the fans. I appreciate the love, and anything I can do to sort of give that back, especially at, you know, which is cool. I get called to do a convention appearances, and Dante, you know, and I have a fairly large resume, which I'm super grateful for. But Dante seems to be the one character that people just can't get enough of, and they keep calling them back. So,
what do you think of your opinion? Why is that, in your opinion?
You know, I think it's just the character. He's one. The game is an exceptional game.
Yeah.
The gameplay, the story, the music. It's just as a packaged game. It's just a really good complete game. You know, and there are different aspects that sort of stick out. And the character himself, I think, is just he's just this fun character that a lot of people can identify with, you know, not caring about much of anything, and, you know, half human, half demon, superpowers, beating up the bad guys, the demons, saving
great wingman.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So it's just like he's just one of those characters that people like. And, you know, the reboot tried to take the character a different direction.
Yeah.
And you know,
it was a nice
attempt, but usually you reboot something because something's not working.
Exactly.
And the fact that the Devil May Cry 3 and 4 sort of showed Capcom, hey, it's working. These characters are great.
And they were adding on a new character too, to, you know.
And they added Nero, and that character was fairly well received. And people, you know, Johnny Bosch, I think, nailed it with that character. People liked the chemistry between Dante and Nero. And so there was a lot of cool things going on there. And then they did the reboot, which, you know, who knows what executive made that decision and who, you know, wanted to go that route, whatever.
Yeah.
But then, they learned. Because then they re-released Devil May Cry 4, the special edition, which was that was cool to get called back because we had an extra couple
that was cuts. That was roughly around the time we first our first interview too.
Yeah, when that came out, and that did huge numbers for Capcom.
Yeah.
So they kind of were like, oh, I guess we probably shouldn't have wasted our time and money trying to do a reboot of something that's already working. So live and learn. I really hope that one day we can get to see another version with those characters. Cause
I really have a hunch that's going to happen. I just call it a hunch, especially, you know, the way things are going and how things are always brought back just from, you know, fan demand.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Capcom would be crazy if they didn't, because I mean, I've said this in passing to Itsuno-san and some of the other producers when I didn't go to E3 this year, but a couple E3s ago, I told the guys, I said, man, this character, this franchise, these guys are, the fans are just 10 years later, you know. Every time I post something about, you know, because I'm deep in the peanut butter, I say, with aliens and, abnormal, paranormal things. But every time I post something, you know, in that realm, all I get is like a couple, four or five comments of, oh, that's cool. Wow, that's interesting. But I always get, what about Devil May Cry 5?
And I'm like, right.
That has nothing to do with what's supposed. stop trolling people. But again, at the same time, that just goes to show the love for the character and how much people really want to see another game. So trust me, I've conveyed that as much as I could to the execs over at Capcom. So I hope they're taking notes. I'm you know, we'll see.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd love to reprise my role as Dante. He's always a fun character to try on and play, and it's just a ball to be able to act stupid and kick some demon ass.
And still be the coolest cat ever.
It'd still be cool. It's like being dorky and cool at the same time, which, you know. There's a few characters out there. I know Star-Lord is kind of like that. I've noticed.
I do see the bit of similarities.
And a lot of people are like, man, that Star-Lord, Dante's a lot like Star-Lord. I have to say, I think Dante came first.
I would think Dante is cooler because I think if he flips a gun up, he would always catch it, whereas I think Star-Lord would probably drop that gun.
right.
In an instant,
But well, you know, Dante, when it comes to the fighting arts, I think has one up on Star-Lord. But as far as dorkiness and coolness, mm-hmm. having the combination of both, Star-Lord's a good match. But yeah, no, it's you know, and I think people are sort of not over, but getting a little bit tired of the uber always cool characters. Like it's nice to have a little goofiness, because I think all of us, you know, humans, we all are a little goofy. We try to be cool. And it's really hard to be cool all the time, you know?
Yes, it is. Now I'm going to switch gears real quick with you.
Sure.
You know, you've been a part of a lot of projects, a lot of really cool projects we spoke about before, like Scott Pilgrim and a few other really cool movies, Ant-Man, of course. And speaking of, you know, Ant-Man and Marvel and stuff like that, you know, with everything going around, and I'm going to ask you this question too, because the last person that was on our show that I asked this question to wind up a few months later ended up in a project, that being actor Mike Mo. So I need to ask you this question too, because I want to see if I'm actually good luck here. If you had a choice, because you've been involved in these projects before, if you had a choice of an ideal character in a Marvel Studios or DC Film Studios, who would you rather be a part of, or who would you want to? What character would you like to be?
Oh wow, interesting question. in the Marvel or DC universe,
whichever you choose, pick your poison.
Huh. Maybe it would be Star-Lord.
Hey, why not? Why not?
Because he's half alien and travels the universe and kicks ass. And I dig aliens and alien chicks. Why not? That'd be like the funnest one.
He really Captain Kirked himself for this generation, didn't he?
He did. You know, he is the Captain Kirk of this generation. Absolutely, that's
between
a good,
you and Vic Mignogna, you guys have a Captain Kirk fetish.
Yeah. Well, I don't say I have a Captain Kirk fetish as much. I'm much more of a Spock fetish than Captain Kirk.
Where he's like Captain Kirk is aiming is like targeting women.
Yeah.
You know, well, Spock, with Spock they just come.
They just exactly. That's see, Spock is cool and he doesn't even have to play cool.
Right. You know what I mean? And women see that.
Yeah. And he just, you know what? You just reminded me of a dream I had last night where I was, it was a dream. It was like Leonard Nimoy and Todd Haberkorn. So Todd plays Spock in the Star Trek Continues series that I help out with sometimes.
Right.
And I guess for some reason, Leonard Nimoy was playing the Spock role, but he was super buff. All I can remember is I think Todd was, and I was asking Todd, why are you getting so buff? And he goes, because Leonard Nimoy, the original Spock, was actually really buff, but you just could tell underneath his tunic.
Like one of those guys that like wears shirts and you can't see the real the definition until.
Yeah. That was kind of, I was having this conversation with Todd in the dream, but then Leonard Nimoy was actually right there, being like buff Spock. It was
what a rock.
You just reminded me of this dream, which I totally.
It's one of those cases like what did that really mean? And you want to really analyze this situation.
Yeah, yeah. Why am I into buff Spock, Leonard Nimoy version? You know, and having this conversation
that
with Todd.
It's the best. That is the best. But you are also involved in movies. You're doing projects everywhere and all the time. I mean, like you said Star Trek continues along with Vic Mignogna and quite a few other talents in there. And you also are doing, you did Sleepless, which starred, you know, Jamie Foxx. You did stuff in there. Mesa, and a project and other projects that you come in 2008. You want to talk about that for a minute?
Which projects are those?
Anything that you can talk about, put it like that.
I just last Monday, Resident Evil Vendetta came out in the theaters for one day. I got a chance to check that out. I don't know if hopefully your audience got to check that out. And I know it's coming out on Blu-ray and I'm sure iTunes and all of that within the next week or two. So that That was a cool, fun project that I got to reprise my role as Chris Redfield. So didn't do the voice. I just did the motion capture.
Right.
But I've been doing the motion capture for Chris since Chris has been doing motion capture.
Right.
That was actually my first motion capture gig back in 1997.
Mm-hmm.
So over 20 years, I've been doing the motion capture for Chris, and originally was in Resident Evil Code Veronica for the Dreamcast.
Oh, that was a classic. People loved that one.
Yeah, that was the first time that they incorporated motion capture into the Resident Evil series.
A lot of John Woo, like, movement in there, too.
Yeah, there was Double Guns.
Mm-hmm.
That one character, I forgot his name, he had, he ended up eating it at the end of the day, but getting zombified.
You're right.
But that was sort of my doorway, my gateway into the motion capture video game realm.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting to see the development of the character. And Vendetta actually turned out to be a pretty good movie. I say that because it was a very tight schedule. We did the motion capture for the entire movie in 10 days.
Wow.
Which was an incredible schedule. Almost all the takes were one takers.
Wow. That is tremendous. I think people understand.
No rehearsal. We did we'd walk through it and okay, here, okay, this is what you're doing. Okay. And action. And then it was do it. And we're lucky if we got a second take. And then it was move on, next, wow. Next setup. And it was an insane schedule. I've never had a harder schedule. And I think they did 2 days of action scenes,
right,
after we left. But it was a very, very tight budget.
What was the total number of hours went into the in a day?
Well, we did 12-hour days.
Right.
But not every day was 12. I mean, I think there was only one day that was 16 hours. But most
still, stamina for 12 hours, let alone 8.
Yeah. Well, as the actors, there were some scenes we weren't in. We got to take a little break and go upstairs and take a little nap or something.
Yeah.
It's really the crew that was just beaten down. Because the crew was there, from early in the morning, an hour before we got there.
Mm-hmm.
To set up the stage and make sure technically everything was functioning. And then they had to close it up. And then they had to wash our mocap suits,
right,
after we left.
Right.
So if we're working 12, 16 hours.
They're there before opening and by after.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the amount of sleep they're getting is and plus, probably an hour train ride back to their home or whatever.
Yeah.
We were lucky. We stayed in a nearby hotel. It was all done in Japan. So it was for those crew. I know by the end of the 2 weeks, they were just spent. You could just see they were zombified. We put some of them in the zombie suit.
speaking of Resident Evil.
Yeah. But yeah, that was an amazing feat.
Right.
So that's why I had my doubts because during the shoot, it was such a tight schedule, one takers on everything. And then we were doing full performance facial capture and body. And to see it come out as well as it did, I was quite amazed. I've been on projects that have been like that and they didn't turn out so well. So
that's really cool.
So hats off to the, again, to the crew and everybody involved. Jason Font reprised the role of Leon. He played the body capture of Leon in Resident Evil 6. He's also a Red Ranger in Time Force.
Nice.
And then we had kind of a little Power Ranger reunion because then we also had Aaron Cahill, was Pink Ranger in Time Force, and
yeah,
she did the motion capture for Rebecca Chambers, and she also ended up doing the voice. Both Jason and I, Leon and Chris have had sort of established voice actors from the past.
Mm-hmm.
So we weren't even offered or able to do the voices for those characters. But Aaron
I guess sounded close enough to Rebecca, because Rebecca she's popped in and out of the Resident Evil series, and I think the voice actress for the past Resident Evil, Rebecca Chambers, it's not quite as established as you know, Matt Mercer has always done, has been doing an amazing job for Leon for the past few renditions.
Right.
Whenever he shows up. And then Kevin Dorman is a good friend of mine. He ended up doing the voice for Chris, which was not his first time doing Chris. He actually performed the motion capture for Piers in Resident Evil 6. So it's kind of an unusual position for him to take on Chris as the voice, where he was acting, you know, with me in Resident Evil 6 as Piers. Yeah. So, he's very familiar with the character, and he also did the voice in the there was this two shoot 'em up games, Resident Evil Umbrella Chronicles.
Yeah.
So Kevin actually, way back years ago, maybe like 10 years ago, did the voice for Chris in Umbrella Chronicles 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. So he sort of reprised the role of Chris this time doing the voice. So it was – anyways, I could talk about that movie forever. But
We hear the love here.
because it's recent, and I guess it turned out so well. And the action team, Sonomura, who was one of Yuji Shimomura's right-hand guys, mm-hmm. and actually did some of the stunts in Devil May Cry 3 and 4. Sonomura was the action coordinator for the movie Resident Evil, and I think he killed it. He came up with some really good, awesome action sequences for both Leon and Chris. And if you see the movie, if you go online and see some of the action scenes are pieces of them are online already, and it's really good. Really, he did a really good job.
Well, speaking of the work that you do as far as motion capture and stunts, Perry, and you know, as a professional stuntman, you've done so many, and you have a huge track record. But you know, as a professional stuntman, do you actually have memorable stunts that you look back in and is like, I knocked it out the park? Or, you know, is it something like, you know, you just want to get into it, get it, make sure it's done properly, and on to the next one?
Well, you know, I worked long and hard on Avatar. It was sort of the main stunt double for Jake Sully in a lot of those key sequences.
The movie or the game?
The movie.
Okay.
The James Cameron film.
Right, right.
So that was a 4-year process for me. That was a long, haul, so to say. And, you know, lots of bruises and lots of getting beat up. And it was, you know, looking back at it, you know, that epic film, it's just amazing. And I actually recently, just last week, I did a convention in Orlando and got the opportunity to go to Pandora World, which is part of the Animal Kingdom Park in Disney.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just phenomenal. I did the Flight of the Passage ride, mm-hmm. with where you actually are, you know, get your own avatar and you get to ride on a banshee. I was totally submerged into that ride. That was the most amazing experience. Theme park ride, bar none, the best experience I've ever had.
I've not spoken only about this before. Disney is just unbelievable with what they do with their brand.
Oh, it was just well, the Avatar brand, it's actually a 20th Century Fox brand, but they teamed up with, you know, Cameron and Fox and were able to create Pandora World, and it is phenomenal. That ride, though, you know, I sort of thought about this afterwards, and I think because I had logged in so many hours of flying banshees in the virtual world, you know, for the film,
because
we did days and days of banshee riding.
Right.
So when I got into that experience, I was in that position. You're riding, you know, you're sort of forward motion, and you're on your toes, and you're wearing the 3D glasses.
Mm-hmm.
When it started, there was a moment or two in there where I completely lost of who I was, Ruben Langdon, the person, and I completely thought I was on Pandora. I completely thought I was
flying a Banshee, and just complete suspense of disbelief and complete immersion.
And that's saying a lot, because, you know, as a person who was actually inside the set, the studio, part of the atmosphere and environment, that says a hell of a lot.
Well, I always, you know, when you're flying the Banshee on set, you always know, okay, I'm on set, I'm portraying a role, and I'm doing it, you know. And ideally, you want to get into the role so much that you do suspend your disbelief.
Right.
But, you know, it was highly technical. It was very physical, the stunts that I was doing. So I was very much aware, okay, I have to bear right, I have to bear left, I have to move my body this way, move my body that way to get the performance that Cameron and everybody's looking for.
Right.
But I think because I had logged in so many hours and I had been in that position for so long, so by the time I got to the ride, you know, 10 years later, it's been 10 years since we did that Avatar experience. Mm-hmm. Then all of a sudden I'm in it. I'm fully immersed. And, it was just an amazing experience. I can't talk enough about it. If anybody gets to Orlando, make sure you go. It's worth the 4-hour wait in line.
I want to go back there so bad, because, you know, last time I went there, I nearly cried when I had to leave. Just those experiences over there, it's just phenomenal.
It was, especially and they just opened Pandora World, I think, late May, early June. So it's still fresh. And I'm sure as time goes, the lines will die down a little bit. But that is an experience. If people can make it out there and can afford the pricey tag, the Disney admission.
That's another reason why I cry too.
Yeah, that's another reason. But if you can get beyond that, if you can get past that,
right,
it is worth it. It is an amazing experience.
Right. Now, you talked about briefly about your peers in Power Rangers and such. And you've been involved in so many other Super Sentai series that we talked about last time. Carmen Ryder, Dragon Knight, I actually saw that.
Great.
I love the upgrade that they've did with these series now. It looks so brand new and fresh now. I really dig what they're doing with that. But a variety of those shows. Off bat, did you get a chance to see the new Power Ranger movie?
I did not, no. I have friends who worked on it, and I saw some of their fight stuff, and I thought that was cool, some of the behind the scenes things. But I just had, I have a special place in my heart for the original show and everything that. When I heard the not so great reviews, I heard it wasn't bad, but then I also heard not great. So I just haven't.
It's a case by case.
Yeah, I'm sure I'll get to it eventually, but I wasn't eager to go run to the theater and spend
my life. Right. Now, no, and when you say original, too, I mean, people got to understand, you were in the original, not the Saban version, but the Japanese original, correct?
Not Power Rangers, but their tokusatsu show. So they have, so there's sort of two things. There's tokusatsu and Sentai. Tokusatsu would be more of your, I mean, I guess it's all kind of tokusatsu in one way, but the Sentai is especially the Ranger stuff, and they sort of associate tokusatsu more with the Kamen Rider, the metal hero series, right? Yeah. They call it which is the metal and insect like stuff. So the year I, and that changes every year, they have different themes, and the year I did it was B Fighter Kabuto, and that was in Japan. And I got to work for Toei, which both series originate from Toei.
Right.
And they were shooting at that time. I think it was Car Ranger or Turbo. I think it came out in the States as Turbo. Right next door. So I would go hang out on the set of Car Ranger Turbo. And see them doing their thing while I was doing my thing, and it was. It was kind of a cool experience, because I was a fan of Power Rangers before I went to Japan. It had just come out. It was like in season 2 or 3.
Right.
By the time I was in Japan doing B Fighter.
Right. Yeah. That's very interesting. I'm very much interested in seeing your opinion on that, because I honestly didn't think it was a bad movie at all. Much to the chagrin of the, you know, certain, and you got to take note, some of these critics are sure. I'm like, it's hard. They're so hard basing expecting an Oscar from all of these, any movie that they watch. And some things is just like, you got to enjoy it for what it is.
Yeah, just have fun with it.
Just exactly.
Yeah, it's not. Don't take it so seriously.
Exactly. But just, you know, social media, the world we live in, yada, yada, yada.
Right.
Now,
exactly.
I wanted to touch base on this because I follow you on Instagram a lot, and I swear to goodness, you're my zen of social media. And I say this because you, I mean, outside of all the other, you know, people that I've, you know, gotten a chance to meet and know and, you know, frequent, you take your IG profile to a whole nother direction, a much more zen and tranquil direction, and you travel everywhere. Or at least it feels like. I feel like you're more Ryu than Ken. Sometimes I look at that, I'm like, geez, he's the world warrior here. What the hell's going on? But, you know, do you, what is it like just being such a, what led you to be such a world traveler at this point?
Well, a lot of it's work-wise. You know, I get, luckily I get called to go to conventions. I have a deep roots in Japan, having mm-hmm. lived in Japan. And when I really enjoy traveling and being in nature and seeing the world. Mm-hmm. And I think so much, you get so much out of that. when you connect to other cultures and other, cities and other parts of the planet, that landscapes, cityscapes. So for me, it's really about connecting to all of that, you know, to the people, to the nature, to even the city. You know, city is a form of nature through, you know, human construction, but there's a lot of energy to be absorbed, and instead of just going and doing my job per se, I look at my job as an opportunity to see the world and connect. So, you know, and I'm thanks for appreciating it. And I sort of keep my Instagram more catered towards this, my lens, the way I see and perceive the world.
Much so. I mean, it's just like you do get one point perspective of Ruben Langdon and what is he saying. I mean, you don't even comment on a lot of your pictures sometimes. You just post the pictures and it actually speaks for itself.
Right. Yeah, I love social media and I think it's great, but I think I like the Instagram format as just a cool place to sort of say, look, this is how I like to see the world.
Right.
And Facebook too, you know, I'll promote myself and put things out there.
Mm-hmm.
But I you know, one of my belief systems is what you put out is what you get back.
Right.
So instead of putting out a bunch of fear mongering and judgmental craziness against, you know, this person or that person or this political thing or mm-hmm. whatever, I prefer to put out to the world how I wish to see the world.
Right.
With, you know, and occasionally I'll put out some, you know, some political thing if it's something that I really feel like I want to get behind it, you know, especially Standing Rock has a close place to my heart because I did go out there right. in December and then following the shenanigans of all of the stuff that's been going out of there, the shenanigans of government and the pipeline people, but also mm-hmm. the courageousness and the bravery of the water protectors and the native tribes out there that were trying to uphold and protect, you know, our planet and the water. So I'll post that kind of stuff. But mm-hmm. for the most part, I'm really just curious about innovation and new technologies and
right.
New discoveries and that's. That's what I like to put out there. So if it's a place to zen out for other people, absolutely. That's I love it.
Works Please for me, up. Man. It like honestly, it's so much of the what you just described. I call it the norm, sadly. And just to see you and to see your pictures tell such stories of your travels and your whereabouts and it would somehow are you using a lens a specific lens for your phone, or is that just you're just getting the lighting right?
It's amazing. What I have an iPhone 7, and the camera on it is just amazing. So most of my pictures come from that. I did recently get a drone and then flying that around, getting some cool shots. And I get, I do have a, you know, professional camera that I shoot my documentary stuff with.
Right.
But most of my posts are just from the iPhone 7.
Beautiful, man. I mean, just the colors alone. And I think it's just, you're also, when you're in an area, there's a lot of natural lighting that really kicks in, and it really, and this is why people, you know, I work with a camera myself, and I'm like, I don't like to do anything that doesn't have natural lighting.
Right. Yeah.
It brings it out so good. And I can tell when you're outdoors. So it's really cool. Do you have any like favorite places that you've been to actually, or, you know, cause you've taken a lot, like I said, you've taken a lot of pictures, but anyone that just stuck by you, in memory?
Well, I definitely a huge fan of my up here in Big Bear. I love the scenery and the mountains. Mm-hmm. And a big fan of Japan and Kyoto. I love Kyoto. I try to get out there once a year or so, mm-hmm. and just connect with all the energy out there and the temples and everything. But I just go, like I said, whatever the convention or the work, wherever it takes me, and I go and end up discovering new places. I love discovering new cool, amazing spots. That's fun, and I love the outdoors, so I try to get out and do some camping or hiking, that kind of stuff.
Right. And I definitely, look, on behalf of a lot of people, probably feel the same way. We thank you for that. I got two more questions for you. Sure. Definitely thank you so much for being a part of the show. It's always a great pleasure having you on here and kicking it up with me.
Sure.
Even in your stage of your career, with your long resume and everything, do you still learn something new from the work that you do on your projects?
Absolutely. Yeah. Every day, I forget how much I have, how much knowledge I have acquired, just because mm-hmm. when you're doing it, you just don't realize it. But always keeping an open mind and open heart to new experiences, to new information, and to not get so focused on, you know, doing things a specific way. And by doing so, absolutely, every time I, you know, go to a new job, a new place, meet new people, I'm getting schooled, I'm getting educated. It's a good place to be. I remember in my younger years, I sort of, you know, thought I knew it all, you know, why don't, you know, especially having,
as we all,
exactly. But, you know, and I remember it being so frustrated, having worked with some of the action masters like Sammo Hung and Jackie Chan, and coming back to the States and working on big budget Hollywood films, mm-hmm. and they just didn't get it. And I was just frustrated and thought, man, these guys just don't get it. I should be here to fix it. And then now to see the evolution of how action, the Hong Kong, Jackie Chan and Sammo Hung evolution, how that has sort of over the years been adapted into Hollywood cinema, mm-hmm. and then taken to the next level with, you know, with the advent of CGI and these cool, amazing shots that and now it seems like Hollywood does get it. In fact, they've surpassed the Hong Kong action by leaps and bounds. Still a lot of cool stuff coming out of Asia, but the frustration, now I go to a movie and I'm like blown away. I'm like, oh man, I could have never done it like that. I could have, with all my Jackie Chan training at Sammo Hung, I would have never have come up with that, you know.
Right.
So a unique blend of East meets West, and that's what we're seeing in theaters and you know, all the Marvel films and DC and all
that
stuff.
Which is great now, because for years this has always been separate. It's like one had something that the other one didn't.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And now
we're making Reese's together.
Exactly. it's a beautiful thing. So
it
I love the cinema, the action films, and the what's coming out
these days. It's just mind blowing. It's hard to believe that we've come so far.
Yeah, man, and still more to go. It's only leaps and bounds of what we can possibly get to next now.
Mm-hmm.
So, last question, and I would be I'd be very tortured if I didn't ask this question on behalf of a few of our ACMG members on Facebook. I've come across a lot of people who come to me and tell me, you know, that, you know, based on the established talents like yourself and other people that I've had on the show, they always wanted to just say that they wanted to be voice actors in a career or just work in a career doing, you know, stunts, you know, like you do a motion cap and stuff like that. What would be your best advice that you could possibly tell somebody about getting into the industry?
Follow your passion, follow your excitement. If acting is your passion, then act, you know. Mm-hmm. by doing what you love and being in that frequency, you're going to attract more of that. Mm-hmm. So instead of looking outside to say, I want to do motion capture, and that's a valid desire and want, but get to the core. What do you really want to do? Motion capture, just doing motion capture is not a thing.
Right.
Acting in a motion capture facility is a thing. So mm-hmm. what comes first is the acting.
Right.
Voiceover. I want to be a voiceover artist. Well, what comes first is the acting aspect of the voiceover.
Right.
So do that first, and then that will lead you down the path to get into the voiceover acting. That'll lead you into the path of getting into the motion capture situation. Mm-hmm. So what I say first and foremost is act and get into theater, get into, you know, you don't have to travel the world to you don't have to go to LA or New York or, you know, these cities anymore. You can simply act from your home. Get into a local theater.
Mm-hmm.
If there is no local theater, then create one.
Right.
Get your friends together. Start shooting. Come up with some ideas. Start making YouTube videos. Shoot short films.
Mm-hmm.
Put that out there. Get critiques from the World Wide Web. Keep making more and while you're doing that, that will lead you down the path to the next thing that will eventually get you into the mocap suit or into the voiceover artist, if that's truly what your desire is. But a lot of people say, "Oh, I want to be a motion capture actor." Well, mm-hmm. There is no real such thing as a motion capture actor.
Right.
A motion capture actor is an actor who happened to audition for a part that requires motion capture.
Mm-hmm.
And you wouldn't be able to get into that position if you weren't a good actor first.
Right.
So first and foremost, act and be doing that. And while you're doing that, it'll just lead to the next
thing. Can I add first and foremost, love what you're doing?
Exactly. Yeah, and if you don't love it, don't do it.
If you don't truly love it, you know, if you're worrying about money, if you're worrying about fame, that's no.
Yeah, because there's much easier ways to get famous. If fame is your goal, then there's other ways to get famous, and acting is becoming a famous actor is. You know, yes, that's one way, and I'm sure people have those goals to do that, but you'll never become a famous actor if you don't have an acting ability.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in this day and age. Before, maybe you could get away with it. You could sort of BS your way through it by saying this or that.
Right.
But now the audience is so educated and so broad. And
sometimes too educated, if you ask.
Yeah. And in Hollywood, the producers aren't going to – I mean, things right now, before it didn't cost so much money so people could sort of take chances and bets and, well, I'll put some money in this movie and see where it goes. Now things have gotten so expensive that it costs a lot of money to produce a feature or a thing. So people aren't going. They're very thorough now. Producers are very thorough in their auditioning process and in their selection. So they're gonna call BS if you are just wanting to be famous and want to do that. You know, then they're not gonna. You're not gonna get anywhere. Right. If you want, you know, if you want to be famous, do it. Think of a cool idea. There's YouTube channels. You can become an overnight sensation now with
doing
YouTube.
The dumbest thing sometime.
The dumbest thing. So if that's your goal, then just do a lot of dumb things and put it on YouTube, and I'm sure you'll get famous.
Concur. I definitely agree with that. Oh, Ruben, thank you so much, man. I really appreciate it. This has been a lot of fun, as always.
Absolutely.
And I meant to say thank you for last year, too, because that was the best 4th of July I've ever.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
It was the 4th of July. And I was like, this is happening? No, so, man, you definitely blew it away. As always, if you could tell your fans, our listeners, where they can follow you and also be in Zen-like state like I am on social media and elsewhere as well.
Yeah, so Instagram is Ruben Langdon, first name, last name, and same with Facebook. I've got a personal page that's filled up already with Max down the friends, but I do a lot of my same post on my fan page, Ruben Langdon, Facebook/ Ruben Langdon. Twitter is the same. It's just in my website, RubenLangdon.com. So I think there's only one Ruben Langdon out there, luckily.
I really have not heard another, and I'll be really scared to see another one. It'd be that doppelganger that we were just talking about.
Right. The beard and mustache, yeah.
Bizarro Ruben.
Exactly.
Real quick, you are making con appearances. Is one of them just happened to be San Diego?
I'm skipping San Diego this year. I have some business in Japan to attend to, so I will not be going this year. I will be at Anime Expo.
That is
so
cool.
Check me out there.
I'll be the doppelganger Ruben Langdon for you on San Diego.
Awesome.
I don't know if I can fool anybody, but we'll work it out.
All right. Well, I'll send them your way.
Ruben, thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you enjoyed this very special exclusive with the one and only Ruben Langdon. You know, let us know what you think. And thank you so much, Ruben, again.
All right. Appreciate it. Thanks, Zach.
This is Dak Xavier Josiah saying, learn to let go, live life, and love all things anime, comics, movies, and games. This is ACMG presents Talk Time Live. We're out of here. Take care.
Take care.
This episode of ACMG Presents Talk Time Live is brought to you by Viewfinders Identity Search and Design, your choice for multimedia development for your brand. Visit VFISAD.com and find out how we can make your vision your reality.